Greetings and welcome to Bear Soup. I'm your host, Ron Serratia. Ahead in this 93rd episode of Bear Soup, brought to you by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books, Michael Thomas Ford excerpt from The Road Home. The call for submissions for Fur the Love of Hair. One more time, Best of Bears. And a reading from Bob McDiarmid's novel, The House of Wolves. News, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Earthside community. You're just in time for another steamy serving of Bear Soup. In Michael Thomas Ford's novel, The Road Home, published by Kensington, he has in Chapter 3 a section that I wanted to read to you. Dr. Radisuski clipped the films to the light box and flipped the switch, revealing Burke's bones. He pointed to an obvious fault line. "You've been putting too much pressure on it," he said. "Didn't Dr. Liu tell you to stay off it?" "She might have," Burke mumbled. The doctor raised one eyebrow. "I thought she might have," he said. "You should have listened to her. I'm afraid you'll have to stay on that cast for much longer than we, and especially you, had hoped."
"How much longer?" asked Burke.
"I'm estimating another 6 weeks," the doctor answered.
6 weeks," Burke said, groaning.
"That's only 2 weeks longer than we originally planned," Dr. Radisuski told him. "It's your own fault for rushing things. Try to take it easy."
"I don't want to take it easy," Burke said.
"Taking it easy is making me nuts. Did I tell you I'm staying with my father? You have no idea."
"Oh, I do," the doctor said. "My father is staying with me while he recuperates from a broken hip. Believe me, that's no day at the circus. My partner keeps threatening to put on the naughty nurse costume he wore last Halloween, just to see if he gives Dad a heart attack."
"Does your partner look good in a naughty nurse's uniform?" Burke asked.
"He's a bear," Dr. Radisuski said. "What do you think?"
Burke laughed in spite of himself. "That's a mental image I didn't need," he joked.
"The white patent pumps are the worst part," said the doctor.
And that was a section from Michael Thomas Ford's novel, The Road Home. Well, this is December, so it must be that time of year again when the Complete Bear gets out its tabulators, its abacuses, and conducts the unofficial Best of Bears poll for this year, 2011. And, of course, Bear Soup Podcast is among the contenders for Best Bear Blog or Podcast. Though we have taken the title already in the past. So, still, I would encourage you to go by and give Bear Soup your endorsement. And as well, I'm plugging the Best Bear publication, would be Tales from the Den, Wild and Weird Stories for Bears, which I edited under the name R. Jackson. So, please stop by there and vote for those categories and all the rest, and check out thecompletebear.com. So my friend Scott McGillivray, the former editor of Bear Magazine and 100% Beef Magazine, and I are putting together a new collection of illustrations and words on the subject of fur, the love of hair. And the deadline for art submissions has been extended to December 19th. So if you are still interested, please contact me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Following a successful third print run of Hair, Hairy Men and Gay Art, publisher Bruno Gemünder returns with Fur, the Love of Hair, in an even larger format. Author Ron J. Suresha teams up with Scott McGillivray as editors for a guided pictorial tour of the hirsute masculine physique. As Ron wrote in his introduction to Hair, to love hair is human, to fur give is divine. Fur, the Love of Hair will further explore the manscape of the hirsute male using dozens of contemporary images. These photographs and illustrations will portray male body hair by the top names in the bear art world, including many independent and lesser-known artists, giving them a chance to display their outstanding work. Essays in both English and German, interspersed along the images, will examine various aspects of gay and bear queer male fur as they are displayed on various parts and the whole of the body. The book will portray a fully diverse range of male images in age, body size and shape, disability, ethnicity and race, and geography. Fur will be a visually captivating and provocative coffee table book that celebrates the worldwide cult of the hairy masculine man. And so, the deadline for Fur has been extended to December 19th. Please, if you have artwork that you would like to contribute, get in touch with me at bearsoup@gmail.com. And thanks. I'm very pleased to present an excerpt from The House of Wolves, a novel by Robert McDiarmid. It's a moving, unconventional love story of a band of men joined in spirit, now back in print. Enveloped by the native spirits of the Pacific Northwest, Roy Wallace and David Moreau's newfound relationship begins. David soon introduces Roy to the House of Wolves, a small intentional community of gay and bisexual men where honor, companionship, spirituality, erotic desire, and brotherhood guide their way. So what follows is an excerpt from Bob McDiarmid's new novel, The House of Wolves, just out from Bare Bones Books. This is chapter 2, entitled Of Blood, Wood, and Stone. The cold winter walk to work that next morning was contemplative and rich. I pulled my heavy coat on and ventured through the fog to school, briefcase in hand. I love early mornings, my time before the kids arrive, alone in my classroom, getting materials ready and focusing on the day's tasks. I sipped my tea and enjoyed the bright sunshine bursting into the room. This morning, I caught myself distracted and dreaming of David, starting to wonder more and more of the household he described, a large collective that was home to 6 men, Richard making 7. I also wondered about the various personalities and the lives of the men I would soon meet. But first was the task of broadening the lives of 20 young fifth graders. Monday mornings were my favorite because we started the day with a fun, high-energy discussion of history. I always found this to be the best way to get my kids back into the swing of things. History is a subject that's always fascinated me. Teaching fifth graders Washington State history was one of my favorite activities of the year. On Thursday, we talked about Lewis and Clark and the movement west and how Washington had only been a state for about 110 years. We were much younger than much of the nation. Students gave reports in teams about different aspects of early Washington history, from logging to commerce to the little skirmishes between British and American settlers. Robbie and Marcel got up and gave a report about the San Juan Islands and the different captains that discovered them. They told us about Captain Vancouver and his lieutenant, Jacob Woodby, and described the very places David took me the day before. We headed to lunch, and I wandered to the front office to check messages. There in my mail slot was an envelope. I opened it with a smile to find a beautiful card with bird feathers arranged on the cover. Thank you for Bowman Bay. See you tomorrow for dinner. Love, David. Even the card had the scent of his tobacco. When I left work the next day, the 2 hours between work and dinner at David's seemed to last forever. I tore out my entire wardrobe, wanting to look my best for this date, finally settling on a cream-colored tab collar shirt and a brand new pair of blue jeans with cowboy boots. I stopped at the store and picked up some tulips and a bouquet and headed out to the house. I followed David's instructions and came down a street along Discovery Park by the water. The house number directed me up an inlaid stone driveway. There, nestled in the ancient trees, was a brick wall with an iron black gate. I opened the gate, walked up the path, and in the shadowy light, came to a door. The porch light was on, highlighting the amazing design David had described on our trip. Carved in relief on the door were 8 bright red wolves, painted in native fashion, connected by their tails into a black circle in the center. I reached out and ran my hand over the carving. The wood slid under my fingers, and I could feel the hand-carved ridges of the craftsman's knife. I stood there a moment, simply studying it. The imagery was powerful to me, partly because I knew this was David's work. Then I knocked. The door slowly opened, and an older man with a shaved head and a bright, white, close-cropped beard opened the door and allowed me into the room. He had a spectacular array of piercings in both ears and stared over his bifocals as he shook my hand, offering me a warm smile. "I am Marlin. We are very excited that you are here. David has told us a lot about you," he said in a thick English accent. Marlin apparently didn't shower often. He had a strong scent. "David is still cleaning up from an afternoon working late in his studio, so he asked me to give you a tour of the house." "Tulips," he said, noticing the bouquet. "David's favorite. Let me run and put these in water. I'll be right back." He left me to admire the great room, the walls lined with wooden inlaid bookshelves and an old-fashioned ladder that ran on a track along the curved wall. There was a spiral ladder up into a loft above it, and in the center of the room was the fireplace where a fire roared. The floor was made of a silvery stone. In front of the fire were dark leather couches and chairs arranged around the firelight. The room's lighting was subtle and seemed to come from nowhere. I stood there a moment, admiring the leather-bound books on the shelf, feeling as though I were in an old English movie. The library was the one room for which I had some input. Turned out right nice, if you ask me. "Come this way. Let me show you the house, Roy." From the living room, we followed another curved hallway to a glass door that opened onto a patio. I finally got a good idea of the layout of the house. It was a collection of round structures, 7 in total. Hallways connected the first 3. Then you had to step outside to reach the other 4 buildings in the complex. From the stone paths between buildings to the adobe finish on the round buildings, it was clear that the complex was eclectic in style, combining English and New England architecture. The buildings were oversized and fortress-like, reminiscent of an English castle, while also having a modern feel. The architecture was inspiring. The buildings created an oval, and in the center was a raised bed garden surrounded by a fence. The garden had recently been turned in preparation for winter. Cobblestone paths led to each building. It really was an amazing piece of work. And I'm going to skip a page here. Continues, on the way out, he pointed to a smaller, round building off by itself, which had obviously been built after the other buildings. It had the same style of architecture, but it was constructed with rubble stone and had thick wisteria vines growing up its sides like something from Tolkien's The Hobbit.
That, my dear boy, is David's studio. Isn't that wisteria beautiful? Such a natural contrast, eh? In winter, a gnarly skeleton of vines, and in summer, massive, fragrant blooms and green leaves. I think David will show that to you. His room, in his own time. A very private man about his craft, he is. And his work is one of a kind, but he often locks himself in there for hours with no company and simply is. He explained that David would anguish over pieces of work and punish himself for not having instant creativity. He and Tristan often fought bitterly over the creative process, so bad sometimes that the rest of the collective's members would just leave the house to them. But perhaps I speak out of turn, Marlin finished. We then re-entered the main building, and David was seated in one of the leather chairs by the fireplace. David grinned, pipe in his mouth, and muttered, "Brought him back in one piece, I see. Thank you, Marlin." His strong body was showing through a tight black t-shirt, and he had pulled his hair back with a tight braid. "Hello, Mr. Wallace," he said. "No harm done, so far." Marlin cackled and smiled back at David. "You have a beautiful home," I said. "It is much more than you have described." David rose, walked up to me, and gave me a strong hug and a deep kiss.
"Tulips, you are quite the charmer, mister."
"Okay, lovebirds, everyone else is waiting in the dining room." And with that, they led me deeper into the house. The stone library floor wound behind a curved wall into another great room that was a kitchen and dining room.
"This is Roy Wallace, gentlemen."
Turning to me, David continued,
"Mr. Wallace, this is William, Moose, Tristan, and Bear."
Around the room were five men.
"These, Mr. Wallace, are my brothers," said David proudly. The friendliest and first to come forward was a lumberjack of a man who had been cooking at the stove.
"Dinner will be ready in a jiffy."
He turned, revealing an apron covered with spots of sauce and food. He had a huge red beard and sparkling blue eyes, and he extended a sauce-splattered hand.
"I'm Moose."
Tristan sat at the bar. He was a small, muscular man with a trickle of a mustache on his lip like Genghis Khan. His deep black eyes concentrated on me. David then introduced the two men at the table. Bear was clearly the eldest of the group, with black and white hair and a beard to his belly button. William almost towered over his compatriots and wore a bright blue tank top and a dark mischievous Van Dyke beard.
"I'm ready," said Moose, and he started serving salads and soups as Tristan delivered them to the table.
David sat at the head of the table and ushered me into a chair to his left. As each of the men took their places at the table, I looked around rather nervously.
"We're very happy to have you here, Roy," began William, "and are delighted that you've met our David. We hope you can relax and just be yourself. We know that we can be a little, how you say, overbearing at first."
Marlin chimed in.
"But don't worry, pup, we don't bite. Unless you ask real nicely, anyhow."
The table of men giggled. William said they needed to say grace, and they bowed their heads.
David spoke. For food in a world where many walk in hunger, for faith in a world where many walk in fear, for friends in a world where many walk alone, we give you thanks, O Lord. Amen. The dinner conversation quickly drew me in and started answering my unspoken questions. I watched and listened as each then explained how each member of the household had different chores and distinct roles. The dinner conversation quickly drew me in and started answering my unspoken questions. I watched and listened as each contributed. They allowed me to participate in silence. Tristan then explained how each member of the household had different chores and distinct roles, but that they learned from one another. He explained that being a member of the house meant that you were open to learning from each discipline that others brought to the collective, and explained that each member of the household had specific duties. Each member, upon arrival, had seemed naturally suited for inclusion. William then spoke up. Why doesn't everyone go around and explain your role and where you fit in the house? William pointed out that he was responsible for making sure the group had activities and cultural events to attend, such as theater and community lecture series. He explained that community service was an important core responsibility of each member of the house, and that each member was expected to volunteer time with a community organization outside the household. Tristan was the gardener and the lover of things that grow. He made sure that, when possible, the household used natural, homegrown items, from food to soaps to incense. Marlin was the teacher, but he also had the reputation as an attentive student. Marlin added, winking at me, that teachers tend to be the best students. He was the one who looked after the library and chose books for them to read. Moose was the cook and the man in charge of making sure laundry and other domestic chores got done. He made sure everyone picked up after himself, that the house remained a haven without clutter. Bear was a personal trainer of body and soul. His job was to make sure everyone kept physically fit with gym trips and meditations of sorts. He also helped the men in the house that were HIV positive by coordinating their various medications and regimens, and made sure the men kept to their schedules and plans. Finally, I learned that David had inherited the patriarchal duties of overseeing everyone else's chores and responsibilities. He also mediated disputes. William smiled, leaned back on Marlin, and said in a deep baritone voice, "We're so glad that you liked it, Roy. Our David here has told us a lot about you. You're just as charming and smart-looking as he told us. We're happy you are here." "Perhaps," Tristan interrupted abruptly. "But to know one member of the house is to know us all. That's the way Richard always wanted it. So, while David is the man who brought you here, we'd like time with you to get to know you."
"All in good time," said William. "Let's not overwhelm Roy on his first visit, gentlemen." His voice was very quiet, but intense and final. When he spoke, his eyes lit up, and he seemed to stare completely into you, making you feel that you were the only focus. His commanding presence was just beginning to show. William continued, "Since you two met at the coffee shop, he's been unable to talk about anything else, and we took that as a good sign. Then, when we encouraged his trip to Bowman Bay with you, that sealed his first impression. So, as you continue to get to know David, we'll be interested in who you are, who you've been, and where you think you are headed. We haven't had a teacher in the house for years since Marlin retired," he said as he looked over at Marlin, who huffed under his breath.
"There are many things to learn about us, as we're a varied and complex lot. So we'd like you to consider, while you continue to see and date and romance our David, that you spend some time with each of us, and let us share and show you what this arrangement does for each of us. Let us learn about you. It should be pretty clear that to date one of us means, in some shape or fashion, to date all of us."
We're not looking for an answer this evening. We're just very happy you've met our David. We want to know more about you and see if joining David here would be something you'd like, that you'd want. The man around the table seemed to beam at the mention of our romance, with David blushing a deep red. I found myself swimming in a swirl of ideas and questions. So, Roy, why don't you tell us a little of your journey, a little about yourself? Said Tristan. I didn't know what to expect when I came here today. I know that I am falling in love with David, but I've never been around a group like you. Honestly, I'm finding it rather overwhelming. I'm looking forward to getting to know you, because anyone important to David has to be worth investigating. But gosh, it's going to take me time to digest this and see where it goes. My mind swirled with the images of the house and the group of men I sat there with. What a unique blend of personalities this group represented, from Marlin's playfulness to Tristan's obvious discipline to David's soft touch. Where have I been before here? What is my journey? I smiled. My life for the last year has been career, 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 and therapy. I flashed a grin at David. I love my kids at school, and I'm having a spectacular year. Kids are so smart these days, and I love making them think in new ways. When my partner died 2 years ago, I was convinced part of me had died with him, and I guess I've been denying myself for a long time. I mean, I dated and stuff, took my turn at the baths, and how long can that be fulfilling, hmm? It's been lonely, but for the most part, purposely so. I didn't want to share my grief and struggle with anyone, so I have few friends these days and have lived the life of a loner. I'd seen David here and there and wondered what it would be like to be with him. He wanders into the coffee shop and then it happened so suddenly. Then to meet you through David, men that I could be friends with and learn from. It's a great offer of change, but gosh, you are pretty intimidating, and honestly, the thought of y'all being sexual with one another, well, it's over the top. William smiled and said, We love each other. That makes for ways to enrich each other's lives some of us never found elsewhere. And that means physical love as well as camaraderie. We are a brotherhood of men who know we have needs, emotional and physical, and we are here to make sure those are met. We celebrate our bodies, minds, and spirits. It's important in our collective here to celebrate every part of ourselves. But I don't want the physical to interfere with you getting to know one, Gus. So let's leave the physical till we know you later. We'd each like to spend some time outside the home or on the grounds being with you, and we'll worry about demonstrating that physicality later. When we share physically, it's a statement of long-standing love and commitment to one another. We hug and kiss, but each of us knows the respectful boundary of this time to getting to know one another, and we'll ask you to respect that as well, particularly with David. And that goes for you too, as he looked at David and smiled. And that goes for you too, he said, as he looked at David and smiled. These have been selections from The House of Wolves, a novel by Robert McDiarmid.
And as an added bonus, here's Seth Rogen on The Conan O'Brien Show, talking about him being an inspiration and bear icon.
Well, as you know, I'm a bear icon. Bears are big, hairy dudes that gay guys like.
Okay.
And you are... and I am that, my friend. It was recently brought to my attention that I am such a bear icon. My friend Will, actually, who wrote 50-50, sent this to me. He told me that I'm a muse in the creative community of the bear-loving world.
People in the bear community who are artists use you as their inspiration.
And one guy used me as the centerpiece for a book that he made, and it's all about what a wonderful bear icon I am. This is real. That's real. I call that one Lazy Sunday. That one just...
Is that at all how you really lie down?
That is exactly how I lie down when I'm naked. Okay. And my penis actually looks like that, with little cubes all over it. There's more, though.
Oh, there's more. What's the next one entitled? That's not good.
That's called Come and Get Me. Call that one Come and Get Me.
You call that Come and Get Me. Now, you should tell us the title of the last one before we see it. Tell us the title before we see it.
I call this last one Peekaboo.
Okay, let's see Peekaboo. No! Someone's got their Christmas card. Yeah.
This has been Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 93. Next show, we'll have an Amit Yildiz update. Shoutouts as usual, music by the Mermen. Thanks to Joe of BearRadio.net. And as always, to my husband Rocco. And thanks to you for listening to the Bear Soup podcast. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by Bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, including the latest in the Hot and Hairy fiction series, Tales from the Den, Wild and Weird Stories for Bears. Email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Our website is www.bearsouppodcast.net. Look for Bear Soup, Bear Radio, and Bear Bones Books, also on Facebook. Bear Soup is produced for the Bear Radio Network, which is not responsible for the content of this podcast. And remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.